This is a Dharmanet presentation.
One of the sayings that my dad used to quote was from Rousseau, the French Enlightenment philosopher, who said that man is born free, but is everywhere in chains. Which, as a social philosopher, is very understandable. Yeah, you see a little baby, they're born. In a kind of external sense, you can say there's freedom there, but from a Buddhist point of view, we're actually born in chains. We're already suffering from greed, hatred, and delusion when we're born. It's a bit of a problem, isn't it? How are we supposed to learn if we're full of greed, hatred, and delusion? How much freedom does a baby have? Freedom to... Not that much freedom, is it? Yeah. Freedom is something you have to learn, you have to work for. You have to attain freedom. It's not something which is just part of how the world is. And this is not just a problem of culture or society. It's far deeper than that. If you look, for example, at animals, like in animal behavior is very far from free, is it? I mean, they don't have laws, they don't have rules, they don't have police, they don't have all of these kinds of things. But, you know, the behavior, if you look at a herd of animals or something, it's quite predictable behavior, and they have to keep within those bounds. They don't stray too far away from the flock, and they kind of respect the hierarchy within the herd and all of these kinds of things. And usually if they transgress that behavior, then evolution removes them from the gene pool fairly rapidly. No? If a deer thinks to itself, I'm not going to hang around with the herd anymore, I'm not going to be a conformist, right? I'm going to go off and be my own deer and stuff. I'm going to be an individual. And then they're going to wander off and they'll get eaten by the first tiger that happens to come along. So from the Buddhist point of view, we're in chains. They're not necessarily painful chains as such. I mean, they're always suffering, there's always dukkha in some sense, but you know, the fact that we're in chains doesn't necessarily mean it's very oppressive. We might still feel free, we might feel happy. But at a certain level, that freedom is very limited. I hesitate to say that we don't have any freedom, but it certainly is very limited what the kinds of choices that are available to us, right? You know, we can choose, am I going to have cornflakes or Special K for breakfast? You know, that's freedom, yeah? And we get kind of deluded to thinking that that's an actual genuine choice. Ah, I've got a choice. I can watch the news on Channel 7 or Channel 9. Because they'll be so different. Yeah. So this is a natural state of affairs. Now, within that natural state of affairs, of course, there's kinds of chains or constraints which are more suffering, which are more painful, which are more unpleasant, and some which are relatively less unpleasant. And those the less unpleasant ones we like to call freedom. But the curious thing to me is why, given that we are in fact in chains, and that we always have been, and that that's all we've ever known, and it's all that all the people around us have ever known, given that that's the case, why is it that we even want to be free? Where does that come from? It's very hard to explain that, for example, in evolutionary terms. Yeah? What evolutionary advantage does a longing for liberation have? I can't think of any. It's hard to explain it psychologically, isn't it? Yeah? We're not kind of conditioned from childhood to sort of have a longing to liberation. That's not something I can remember, you know, I can't remember watching cartoons that gave me that idea. Or maybe that was it. Maybe it was watching Monkey, the TV show. Maybe that's where I got it. And even that wasn't so much about the longing for liberation. So where is it? Where does it come from? Why do we feel that such connection with that idea to be free? And when we hear that, you know, when we have such an innate or an automatic positive response to the idea of freedom, don't we? You know, we like to think we live in a free society. We like to think that we are free. And even if we acknowledge that on the spiritual level we're not free, still we want to be free. There's a very deep longing to be free. And I think this is quite interesting. So on the one hand, we want to be free. And we want to be free at a level which is, I think, very, very fundamental. It's like one of the, I think it's almost like one of the basic responses or motivations, which is so much at the heart of our experience that I'm not sure how much we can go beneath it. It's like, say, the longing for pleasure, for example. You know, it's such a basic drive that we're not sure whether you can find anything that underlies it. And the longing for freedom seems to be so very basic. But even though it is very, I think, quite basic and quite innate to humanity, it's certainly more emphasized and more at the center in the Indian philosophies compared to other philosophies. And in Chinese philosophy, it's much more about living a good life and so on. And similarly in the Greek and the Western philosophies. Whereas Indians particularly caught hold of this idea of freedom, of liberation. It's very basic in Indian culture. Not everywhere, but very widespread, even before the Buddha. Why that's so, I don't know. I remember a story I was told once when I was in India in Bodh Gaya a few years ago, and I had a good chance to spend a few days with this monk called Kiripad Gauranyananda, who's a very famous Sri Lankan teacher. And he one day they went and visited Rajagaha. And while they were there, they were walking up the hill and there was a little beggar boy, you know, kind of in India, and all the kind of little kids are always coming up and begging for food and stuff. And I remember one time when I visited India, we went into the park where King Ashoka's palace was, and this is apropos of nothing, but we went into the park where King Ashoka's palace was, and on the other side of the park, this big open sort of grassy space, and all these kids were playing cricket, right? So, you know, happy as Larry playing cricket and stuff like that, and then they saw this bunch of tourists arrive, and they come over and they're all, oh,
Oh, backsheesh, backsheesh.
Anyway, so this little beggar kid comes up to Bhatanyanananda and he says, and Yanananda, he's a very kind of very charismatic monk, and he just said to him, you know, are you suffering? And he said, yes, I'm suffering. He said, do you want to be free? And he said, yes. And he just fell at his feet and bowed and said, you know, be my teacher. Please, please lead me out of this suffering. I don't want to be reborn. So this idea, I think, is very innate in Indian consciousness. And much in the West, it's much more like, I'm quite happy to be here. And if you can just do some meditation and just, you know, we can just take my stress away so I can keep on having all my nice things and doing all the things I want and then just without the stress, and then that'll be fine. Thanks very much. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Samsara with benefits. You know, there's a perfume called Samsara, apparently, someone was telling me, yeah. Is it? Yeah. I bet it is, yeah. So we have this longing for freedom. And yet at the same time, it's kind of scary, isn't it? And this is also kind of an interesting phenomenon. Like, you know, being in jail is very hard, but getting released from jail is also quite hard. Yeah. Not having any boundaries. Yeah. Not having any. What does it mean when you say that there's no limits? And it's at that point when you start to talk about freedom at a deeper and deeper level that your concepts and ideas of what it might be start to break down. Because freedom, if we say we become free, then freedom implies a change. Now it's because of we define ourselves, who we are, by our limits, right? Our names, our identities, our job, our gender, all of these things. This is how we say this is who I am as distinct from somebody else. So if you don't have those things, if I'm not going to identify myself with these things, if I'm going to disentangle myself from these things, then who am I? You're lost. Which of course is the point. So freedom is one of the great unknowns. It's even more unknown than death. Yeah? I mean, is death, you know, what is death? I mean, death, of course, death is unknown, but and we have a fear of death, but, you know, basically, well, what are your options? I mean, either you go to sleep and don't wake up, or, you know, maybe that's what happens, or maybe you get reborn somewhere. In which case you now have another existence, which is either like this one or it's like something else. You know, so there's not actually that many options about what actually might happen after you die. But freedom is something quite different because it's so like a profound freedom is so radically different than anything we've actually encountered. So we have this kind of strange relationship to it, that on the one hand we want it, on the other hand we're afraid of it. And as is usual with our human responses to these things, neither the fear nor the longing for freedom is particularly useful. And neither of them is actually really got anything to do with the core of the matter, which is the freedom itself. So how do we move towards freedom? How do we not be a slave to these kinds of either kind of idealizing a notion of freedom, right? So this is what you find a lot in spiritual circles, that people kind of have this some idea of what freedom should be or what enlightenment should be or something, and then I've got to get from here to there. And that causes all kinds of problems. Or else the fear of it. And it's something that does come up. It's not just an idea to talk about fear of freedom. It's a reality that you will experience in your meditation. You know, you will get to a point in your meditation where it becomes very fearful, where you have to step into the unknown, where you have to really let go on a profound level. And it can be terrifying. As always, the Buddha took a very pragmatic approach to these things. And a very sensible approach. And the essence of the Buddha's approach is nothing, there's no great secret, but the essence of his approach to it is, well, take it one step at a time. Yeah? Let go of one bit of entrapment at a time. Let go of one fetter at a time. See what that's like. So rather than thinking of freedom as some kind of absolute state, we think of freedom as a relative state. You know, freedom from this. No, it's not just an abstract noun. It's freedom from this, whatever this is. So this is one or other of those very many things which causes us suffering. So when we say we're free from this, we're free from something which causes suffering. Free from some form of greed, hatred, and delusion. So rather than trying to solve these problems in the abstract, we try it out and see, little bit by little. This is one of the things which I think is a very, very important characteristic of spiritual teachings, and I think something which we need to understand. People often say that spiritual truths and principles are beyond words, right? That you can't explain it, that you can't conceptualize it, and so on. And it's true, but I'm always a bit uncomfortable with talking in that way and when people kind of talk that way, because it seems that what it's saying is, well, it's like a license to be able to say whatever kind of wiffly, waffly, woolly, fully bits of thingies that you want to say, and nobody can say anything different because, well, you're talking about the unspeakable. So it's just a kind of a license. To me, it's just a license to babble. Whereas what the Buddha would say was, it's not that, you can say, well, there are certain things which can't be captured very adequately with words, certain profound truths. But that doesn't mean that we can't understand them, and it doesn't mean that we can't talk about them. But what he would say is, well, come back to the method whereby you experience it. So I can't say what that thing feels like, but what I can say is that if you do this, then that will lead towards the experience of that thing. And it's in the experience of it that the paradoxes dissolve themselves. So this one paradox that we've been talking about, it's not a logical paradox, it's an emotional paradox, that we both long for freedom and we also fear it. And I think both of those ideas are actually equally mysterious in a way. I mean, I think if you put those two things and say we long for freedom or we fear freedom, now, initially you'd say it's obvious that it's rational to long for freedom, or it's normal to long for freedom, and it's kind of a bit weird to fear freedom. But then when you reflect on it a bit more, then it becomes, it's not so clear that that is in fact the case. In fact, the longing for, why would we long to be free when all we've ever known is being in chains? And surely there's something rational about being afraid of something which we've never experienced, and where all of the coping mechanisms and the things that make us get by, the things that give our life meaning and purpose, when all of those things have let go of, surely it's quite sensible to be afraid of that, right? It's quite a rational fear. So there's this curious paradoxical relationship between these two emotions, our emotional reaction or response to fear, to freedom, to the idea of freedom. And the resolution of the paradox is not through, you know, working it out theoretically. The resolution of the paradox is in the experience of freedom. And then in the experience of freedom, then those emotions dissolve. That's one of the things that you're free from. You're free from both the longing and the fear. This phrase that Venerable Sariputta used one time when he's talking about death. He says, neither longing for it nor fearing it, like a workman waiting for his wages, I bide my time. Yeah? Interesting choice of simile there, yeah? Yeah, he's done his work, he's going to get his reward. No point in worrying about it. So, freedom is something which, even though on that very profound level of freedom, might seem very distant. And yet if we look into our experience and reflect on what happens to us each day, we experience it at some level every day. Right? If we think of relative freedom, we're relatively free from something every day. When you have breakfast, then you're free of the hunger that you had before having breakfast. Yeah. So constantly through the day, we're experiencing some form of stress, some form of worry, some form of anticipation, some form of longing, all of these things, and then that's. The fear, the longing is met, or the worry is abandoned, or something happens so that stress is no longer, and we're free from that. So the means of overcoming and getting beyond this paradox of both the longing for and the freedom from fear is not from working out the theory of it. The means of overcoming it is through letting go bit by bit from those suffering. But also in reflecting on that, bringing that to awareness. It's not just enough to overcome those things, because everybody does that, right? Everybody has bits and pieces of suffering during the day, and they manage to let go of it or overcome it or whatever. Everyone does that. But we need to reflect on it. We need to become aware of it. Yeah? Oh, okay. This was like this. And then it's not. I've just came to Sydney. I just arrived today from Perth. I had a very interesting journey. I left the monastery at midday on Thursday and didn't arrive at my destination till midday on Friday. So basically, 24-hour journey involving various adventures along the way of cancelled flights and blah blah blah. And, you know, you can see that coming up in those kinds of situations, can't you? Yeah? When, you're sitting there and the flights, you know, you're sitting there waiting and you're thinking, hang on, shouldn't they be making the boarding call soon? And then there's an announcement, oh, hang on, well, the flight's delayed. flight's delayed again, oh, flight's cancelled because of engineering. That's what they said. That's the only explanation they gave. The flight is cancelled because of engineering. What does that mean? And then they're like, okay, everybody go down and stand at the counter and we'll give you all new flights and so on. So you kind of go down there and there's like three people working at the counter and there's like 200 people waiting. And those three people are busy running around doing all kinds of things and not actually processing anybody, so it takes ages. So this is kind of very kind of stressful thing. You know, and you can see that, and that's happened again and again and again in that kind of process, and you can see that coming up, and, well, will I go, and will I not, and what will happen, and so on and so forth. But then you just let go of it. Oh, okay, it's just not there anymore. And if you don't have those kinds of expectations, then life is just so much more free. You don't have to worry about those things. We in the West, we think that we're free, but we're so trapped by our expectations about things. You know, if the traffic doesn't flow, or if the food in the restaurant isn't good, or anything, you know, so fast that you get angry or you get annoyed or you get disturbed. And that's not freedom. Yeah? That's being trapped. So watch it. Watch how you experience freedom. Watch when you're getting entrapped. Watch what happens when you get caught up. Greed, hatred and delusion is binding you to something. Start with the little things. Start with when you can't. I remember one time I was with Chandra. We were in Canberra and we were coming out in the morning and we wanted to get a cup of coffee. And the only place that was open, because we were driving, it was really early morning, the only place that was open was the McDonald's drive-thru. So we go to the McDonald's drive-thru and it's like this kind of disembodied voice in the speakerphone. And neither Chandra and myself are particularly used to drive-thru kind of things. And we're like there and we'll have an espresso. Sorry, that's a latte? No, espresso. Oh, sorry, it's a latte with a shot of espresso. No, just an espresso. Sorry, what was that? Espresso. Okay, so that's a latte with a shot of espresso. We're like, okay, whatever we're having. They actually just give up. Say, whatever they give us, it's all right. It's a cup of coffee. That'll be fine. So when you reflect like that, the more you reflect, this is where the holding, this is where the letting go from, this is what the freedom feels like. This is what the experience of freedom is. And in that experience of freedom, there is neither anything to long for, nor is there anything to fear. Longing is not freedom. Fear is not freedom. In the experience of freedom, there is something. It has a quality which is, you can't even say it's pleasant, because that's just another experience. It might not be pleasant. It might not actually have a particular feeling. It could be anything. And the Buddha gave these similes for the bliss of meditation. When he's talking about you meditating and you let go of the five hindrances. Very, very interesting. When he talks about that, he said it's like a man who's been sick, lying in bed with a fever and sweating and so on. And then later on, they get better. And they can rise up from their sick bed and go about and do their work. And they'd feel happiness because of that. But that kind of happiness of being healthy, it's not a particular feeling, is it? Right? You still feel pleasure, pain and neutral feelings just as you did before. Or we gave the simile of a man in prison, yeah, who was in jail and then got let out of jail. And then they feel a happiness because of that. But again, that's not a particular kind of feeling, is it? Yeah, everybody who gets let out of jail has a different feeling. Their experiences are different. Or we said it's like someone on a journey across a desert. And then when they would come to an oasis and they could drink the cool water and rest in the shade of the trees. But again, it's not a particular kind of feeling. There's something to that freedom, which is deeper than a feeling. It's not a pleasant feeling. And that experience is telling us a little bit about what Nibbana is. Because Nibbana is nothing else than that experience, letting go, not just of a little bit of greed, hatred and delusion, but letting go of greed, hatred and delusion completely. The full letting go. Until we reach that, then these two things, the longing for freedom and the fear of it, will always be there. At each stage, we don't learn, right? I mean, you learn to some degree, but it keeps coming back. That's what the nature of these things, you know? You keep reflecting on it. Oh, I let go of that. I let go of that suffering, and I was free of that, and that was okay. And you can reflect on it. Oh, that's all right. But then the next time it comes up, it'll be the same thing, won't it? On the one hand, you're longing to be free of this. You know, maybe it's an addiction. I'm longing to be free of the addiction to caffeine. When will I be able to give it up and abide free from having to get my shot of caffeine every day? But at the same time, you're a bit kind of scared of it. Well, I gave up caffeine. Do I really want to? Yeah. And this kind of... And letting go of that. It's a little taste of what Nibbana is. Okay, so this is my talk for you this evening on fear of freedom.